Welcome back. This is the Sunday Puncher Podcast. This is Angelo. I'm your host. I got Lex here with me. Lex, say hello.
Yo, yo. What's good, people?
And we are here to talk about boxing. That is what we discuss on this podcast. Lex, how's everything going? It is summertime. You still quarantined up? Or are you one of those bad people that's out here, you know, at the pool parties, like certain boxers I'm not going to name here, Michaela Mayer?
No pool parties, no crab shacks, just quarantine, face masks, and boxing.
And from what I know about you, fix your mic, by the way, you keep rubbing it. What I know about you is that you're always on the phone. I don't know who you talk to, what you're talking about, but damn. So let's get into this. We had Matchroom come back, PBC is back. It's fair to say everyone is back. Frank Warren's back. Top Rank, they come, they went, they're coming back. Everyone is back. Does it feel normal for you? Like, do you feel like we're back where we were before?
I don't want to say we're back where we were before, but we're slowly getting there. You know, PBC, Showtime PBC has released an amazing schedule, in my opinion. Still waiting to see what Fox is going to do. We'll see this Saturday, I'm pretty sure. I think Top Rank and Other have a little bit of catching up to do, but like with Top Rank is some cool stuff lined up on the, like in the coming weeks or months. So,
well, we hope that is the hope. Golden Boy, they're doing just about what they were doing before. I mean, Virgil Ortiz is still in showcase fights, and that's fine with me. Virgil Ortiz, while everybody is super excited about him, and there's certainly reason to be excited, I want to take it slow. Because I want guys to develop the right way so they don't look silly when it's like, oh, wait, he's never seen that style before. Now he's just getting completely outboxed. Let Virgil Ortiz get that just a little bit of extra seasoning and he'll be just right. That Fortuna and Linares fight, great fight. Hopefully we can get this Ryan Garcia and Luke Campbell fight, although that fight is still not signed and Oscar De La Hoya is taking shots at, I think, Eddie Hearn, but it could be himself. I don't know. So let's get into this. This past weekend, we had Angelo Leo step up and fight for a world title, the vacant WBO title. He fought Tremaine Williams, who was not the original opponent, Stephen Fulton. Tremaine Williams, he stepped in, still highly rated with the WBO, undefeated, good fighter, and Angelo Leo won. So first and foremost, let's talk about the general, like, the show itself. In your opinion, what do you think, if at all, you may not agree with this, but what do you think set Showtime's broadcast apart from the other shows, say, Top Rank's Bubble in Vegas, BT Sport, I don't remember, but the shows Zanfer was doing in Mexico, and then also Eddie Hearn's the little garden shows that they were doing. So what do you think set this apart?
Well, for me, I've only watched the ESPN series so far. I haven't watched any of the Mexico shows or the UK shows, so I'll speak about what I do know. And what I appreciated about the Showtime card last night is, like, there wasn't a lot of dead time. Like, that was killing me, trying to watch the ESPN cards, and there's, like, commercials, Tim Bradley eating corn dogs.
It wasn't a corn dog, Kriegel. It was a sandwich. Same thing.
Yeah, like, it was just not doing it for me. Chessator and Kriegel telling, like, sob story after sob story. It was just, it made it difficult to watch. I really appreciated Showtime leaving very, like, there was never more than 5 minutes between fights, I don't think. They did a really good job of getting the ring cleaned up, which was dope. The interviews they did during the fights with the previous fighter that won was dope. I liked Abner Mares. It was weird not hearing Paulie, but I thought Abner Mares did a good job. They stuck to the fights, which I liked a lot. Overall, I'd probably give it B+, maybe. There was like a small moment where they had some sound issues, but excluding that, really good job by the Showtime crew.
I mean, I would give them an A if we were grading, which I did not say, but, you know, we could grade it. I would say it's an A. You know, the sound issue, no doubt about it, was a little... It was pretty bad during the main event. About half the fight, the sound was doubling up. And I've certainly had that problem while recording on the podcast. So I can't really say too much about that. I know why it happens, but, you know. But overall, one of the things I really liked about it is Top Rank did a very good job. I must say they did a really good job duplicating the kind of like the atmosphere of a fight. So you had the pumped in crowd noise. The commentary was fine, and the way the ring and everything was mic'd up, it sounded normal, like we were at a normal fight. But and I could say the same for everyone else. Everyone else has tried to make you feel like the same way you usually feel when you do the fight. And there's nothing wrong with that, and that is one mindset. But one of the things that I said immediately was, like, I want to see some experimentation on these broadcasts. What I want to see is not trying to do that. I don't think that that's a good idea. Like, you're not going to get the same experience and same feeling as there is when there's a crowd, because there's no crowd. Like, I'm sorry, there's no crowd. You're not going to do it that way, okay? And the MLB's done a really good job, and the NBA as well, of, like, kind of making you feel like the crowd not being there isn't missing. And what Showtime did is they said, okay, we're not going to try that. What we're going to do is we're going to try to make this sound like a fight, and that's it. And so the ring was mic'd up differently. The broadcasts or the commentators were mic'd up differently. And what we got was like a much different feel for the fight. Like, I don't know, when Joe George knocked down Escudero, it was weird, because normally when there's a knockdown in a fight, the crowd goes wild and it's louder. Even if nothing was happening, it was the most boring fight. You're watching Laura Gache and it's boring, and then a knockdown happens and then the crowd goes wild, and it's wild for, like, you know, until the fight starts again, right? Well, in this fight, when Escudero got knocked down, it was loud as he went down, but as soon as he hit the canvas, it got silent. And it was such a different vibe to it than we're normally used to. And, like, it makes sense. Like, if you're standing by next to somebody and they get knocked out and their head slams off the floor, like, you are not going to be jumping up and down, maybe as you see it. But once you see that, oh, damn, he is out, you're going to kind of, like, be a little reserved. And that's how it felt. You know, it felt like I'm watching two dudes fight in my living room, basically. And they're not breaking anything, which is good.
Yeah, I'm sorry for laughing as you were speaking, but the silence when he hit the mat really amplified how scary the actual knockout was. Like, I screamed in my room when the punch landed and I noticed he was falling, and then you didn't hear any crowd. And it was like, wow, like, this dude is, like, he got hurt bad.
Yeah, that was bad. And yeah, it was crazy, like, when I was watching it live, and, like, I felt that way early in Top Rank. So I was like, hey, there was a knockdown, but it was kind of a little jarring, because, like, I didn't hear anything. But it was kind of like just a hum the whole time. And so it wasn't that big of a drastic difference. But this one, it was just like, it was loud, and then there was nothing. And that was to me, very jarring to hear. And the punches sounded insane. They were so loud, especially for the light heavyweights, who obviously punch a lot harder than the 422-pounders that we saw after that. So what do you think about the set?
I liked the set. I liked it a lot. I mean, it was kind of, I don't want to say, like, simple, but maybe minimal, but it, like, in a very good way. Like, I liked how it looked when the guys were walking in. And besides that, it seemed like it was just all the ring. I didn't feel too many distractions, like, going on outside of the ring. It was a good vantage of the action. And, you know, I enjoyed this set. To be honest, I enjoyed everything. I was thinking, as I said, B+, that it wasn't too harsh of a grade. But
I don't know that I agree with that. I liked Top Rank set better, but I feel like we need them to combine, because Top Rank, like, the room, the setup of where the light boards and all that stuff were, that was great. And I would have loved to have seen something like that. But the one thing I didn't like about Top Rank is that they didn't dim the arena. You still had all these lights and pictures in the background, and it was really distracting at times from the action that was happening in the ring. Whereas Showtime, I thought the arena, well, I guess we're going to call it an arena, the arena around it was very bland looking, but when the fight was going on, it looked good, because they toned everything down so that it wasn't a distraction to what we saw in the ring. So what I would have liked to have seen is that Top Rank, we start with that, but then during the fight, we switch to Showtime. But other than that, I mean, this is small nitpicking, like, good fights are good fights. And that's really been what sets this card apart from the Top Rank cards. The Top Rank cards featured, you know, there were some fun fights. There were some pretty brutal, violent slugfests. But it wasn't world-class level boxing. There were occasional guys who could box at a world-class level, but their opponents certainly weren't anything close. And on the Showtime card, what we got was an opener that featured two guys who, I mean, that fight was probably better than most of the fights that Top Rank put on. And then the co-main, same thing. And then the main event, obviously, that was a high-skill fight. I mean, you saw a lot of feinting, a lot of speed. Like, everything was on display there, which we haven't really seen in those fights outside of maybe main eventers on the Summer Series. So that, I think that alone was a huge difference. And you couple that with the pace of the card, which you mentioned, and it was really well done. I'm pretty shocked that Showtime didn't have any more hiccups, because I expected that there would be some... They'd have some problems. Like, Top Rank had timing problems at the beginning, and I figured Showtime would. But I guess they really did their homework to make sure that this could go off smoothly.
Yeah, like, I'm not that I know Steven Espinosa. I feel like you do, but I don't. But I want to give him a big shout, because, like, it felt really on point. Like the timing of everything, like, we talked about it a little bit before, but it just felt sharp. There wasn't too many accidents or just, like, missteps. And one thing I really noticed is the broadcast crew focused so much on the fights. And I personally like that. I don't like when the announcers, like, talk about what's going on with Top Rank fighters or DAZN fighters or Tyson versus Roy, which they, like, someone baited them. Someone baited Abner, I think, and they completely just were like, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
I mean, like the focus.
They did bring it up a couple of times. Like, you know, they kind of, like, almost went off track. And then they brought it back. I think the one part was, I think during the Aleem fight, they started laughing. Like, they were just having a good time and they were laughing with each other. And it was like an extended period where they weren't talking about the action. But then Moro, like, definitely redirected them and said, like, you know, to be like, let's focus on the action here. Because I think the producers are obviously telling them, like, you have a fight in front of you and you talk about that. Don't worry about anything else. Because people ain't here to listen to your podcast where you talk about what's going on in boxing. They do joke about stuff and they do mention other things, but, like, it isn't a concerted effort to have that conversation. And I guess that's the difference. Like, they don't have a conversation about things. They may mention things, but they don't have a conversation.
Okay. Yeah. Like. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was gonna say we should talk about the fight now.
Yes, let's.
All right. What did impress you most about Angelo Leo?
So I saw Angelo Leo on the Tank undercard. It was the portion of the fight that was. Or the portion of the card that was on YouTube. And, like, I saw something in him. I wasn't sure what it was, but I just sensed that he is a decent little fighter. And, like, I was so happy he won because he proved my point. Like, he just showed so much grit and toughness and, like, resilience. And the style in which he won, I don't think we get that very often, where guys kind of just, like, they kind of just take it from the other opponent. Not to say he's not skilled, but, like, from the early onset of that fight, it looked bad. It looked like Tremaine was going to, like, run away with it. He looked like the superior technical fighter. He was getting the lefts in there pretty good. And around the third or fourth round, Angelo Leo just bit down and kind of, like, shut everything down and took it from him. And he may have swept the rounds from that point on.
I mean, I think he definitely did. Yeah, what you're pointing to, I think the way I saw it was, like, Angelo Leo's performance is a performance that we don't see too often in boxing. Now, not to say we don't see guys win big, we don't see guys dominate. That what I mean is that it was there was a progression in that fight, and it was a really measured performance where, like, you saw he was getting blown out. It looked like early, and then he adjusted. But not only did he adjust, this is the difference. Is that it was a slow adjustment where he slowly added and added and added until you get to, like, the eighth or ninth round and it's like, wow, this guy has no shot at this point. And that's what I saw out of him. Like, it was a really nice performance where he built momentum in that fight and never let up. And that, you know, that's hard for a lot of guys, especially a young guy like him who's never been tested. A lot of people thought he didn't deserve that fight with Stephen Fulton. And he came in and gave a real mature performance.
And like, again, I don't know if everyone else is going to give him as much credit as I do, but to take a southpaw amateur standout, undefeated fighter who knew he might get the call, on 3 days' notice, maybe?
Well, I think it was Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday.
So a couple of days notice, 4 or 5 days notice, whatever. Like, that's a tough, like, that's tough. That's like not an easy task. And, you know, I don't know how much the listeners are on Twitter and Instagram, but I saw so many pro fighters saying Tremaine was going to take it easily. Devin Haney.
Shakur Stevenson was trying to bet people money.
Chris Colbert was saying, and all these guys were like, I'm taking any bet. Richardson Hitchens was also saying, and everybody was like, I'll take any bet. Put your money up. I'm going with Tremaine. I'm going with Tremaine. Leo was the underdog going into this fight, if I'm not mistaken. And this kid just showed so much grit and tenacity. Like, it was an excellent win. And this isn't to downplay Tremaine. Like, he looked amazing. And maybe he didn't prepare well, or maybe the body work got to him. But I want to see him back in the ring. I hope PBC brings him back like they have some of the guys in 154, because I think he can still make noise. It was just Leo's night. Last night.
No, certainly Tremaine Williams is a talented guy, and it looks like Leo might be one of the better guys at 122. Not to say that he's going to be the best guy, not that he is the best, but he looks like he's going to be able to be at the top among those names. I mean, we can go down the list right now, and I think he easily beats Brandon Figueroa. I think he's going to beat Stephen Fulton. And, like, I was in that boat, too. I watched some of Tremaine Williams, and I was like, okay, this guy's good. Like, he is fast, he's a counterpuncher, and he's a southpaw. That is going to be a nightmare for Leo, or, well, we should say Leo. They say Leo. Because this guy's been training for an orthodox fighter, and all of a sudden now, he's going to get thrown with a different style, and, like, you know, people say, like, oh, Tremaine Williams is a similar style to Fulton. Like, I don't know. I don't really believe. It's funny because I kind of saw, like, some of the things that Tremaine Williams did in this fight. I felt like that was going to happen to Fulton, where Fulton was just going to get dragged into fighting the way Leo wanted him to fight. And the funny thing is, like, you know, there were plenty of people, as you mentioned, that thought that that was not what was going to happen. So it's really interesting to me that Tremaine Williams came in. I mean, he was the betting favorite going into the fight. Like, the line, when I saw that they changed the line from Fulton to Tremaine, Tremaine was like minus, he was like a small, but he was like a clear favorite over Leo. So I don't know if the books had it wrong or Tremaine just really let everybody down. I don't know. But
I don't think it was either, to be honest. I mean, again, like, I think they said on the broadcast that Tremaine was ranked number one for his weight class as an amateur at one point in time. And, you know, like, he went to jail. Who knows what happened from that point as an amateur till now. But, like, he looked good. Like, I think Leo, just you got to give it up to him. He did his thing last night.
No, so here's something that, a little interesting, like, subplot here. So let's say that he obviously didn't say it in the immediate aftermath, but what we do know is that he had some time with Floyd, where Floyd was giving him some pointers and coaching him up. What if he comes out and says, like, hey, this is the work. This is what you saw was kind of like the impact Floyd had on me. That is going to help him so much, because he's going to get that rub. People are going to talk about him as being Floyd's boy and all this stuff. And
no, I totally see, like, a very big little engine that could story developing with Leo. I mean, like, first of all, his story of, like, being homeless, sleeping in his car, linking up with Floyd in the TMT gym is crazy. And he has such a pleasing style. He's got a cool look, like, with the little, like, I don't even know what you call that hair, but whatever. He's got a cool little look.
It's the 2020 Jerry curl.
The 2020 Jerry Core. I think that he could be one of the biggest benefactors coming out of the pandemic. Like, he could get a lot of momentum. I think he might be like a boxing hipster go-to favorite, like, moving forward.
I don't know. You're getting ahead of yourself. That's in a way, buddy.
Well, top three.
But what I think is he's going to be one of those guys that's just going to be slept on, that everyone's going to, like, I feel like he may have a style that is hard to put your finger on why it works and why he's good. And people are just going to sleep on him, and they're going to keep picking against him. Like, here's a question. You know, do you think Fulton would have won on Saturday? Do you think he would have done any better than Tremaine Williams?
I think that it would have been a very close, like maybe a debatable fight. Because like when I saw Fulton fight last was against Kamagai, I think.
And like Kamagai fought Robert Guerrero.
Kagai was like super tough and rugged, but he was more rugged than a good fighter. And in spots, like I was worried that Fulton would lose that fight, but he pulled it out. He showed toughness.
I mean, I felt that way too.
But he showed the skills to get the victory. Leo is way better than Kagai, but he's equally rugged. So I don't know. It'll be a very interesting fight. I'm looking forward to it. I think last night set that fight up in like an amazing way, and it'll have like people are like, I saw all over Twitter, everyone's like, I can't wait to see Leo versus Fulton. And Fulton's like not talking trash, he's being respectful, but like he's building it up too. So I'm super looking forward to that fight. I'm rocking with Leo because like I like him a lot, but like Fulton's dope too. So it's a win-win both ways for me.
Yeah, that it's interesting because Fulton falling out has now become the best thing to happen to this whole situation. 122 PBC to the fighters, because now like Fulton and Leo before this fight was like a fight that people that didn't think that this was a good fight. Now everyone, at least within our circle of people, we knew that this was Fulton and Leo was going to be a 50-50 fight. It was far from a done deal, despite the betting line saying that Fulton was going to be a big favorite heading into that fight. But now that Leo got a chance to fight somebody who's good in Tremaine Williams and really just completely and conclusively beat him, now I think people are really interested in seeing how Fulton could deal with him. Because, I mean, I think right now on paper, you can't make Fulton a very big favorite now. This is a very tight matchup. If you want to have Fulton as a slight favorite. But it really helped because now you have this attention on 122. We know that Tremaine Williams is still a good fighter and that maybe a guy who doesn't work the body and has the work rate and size and the power, but the strength of Leo, maybe he looks a lot differently. You have Rais Aleem on the undercard who looked very good, who probably beats Tremaine Williams, but who knows? Styles make fights. And then you have the rest of the crew at 122, Danny Roman. Carlos Castro just looked really good on that top rank card. Ray Vargas, who we think is moving up, but whatever. I mean, you have so many now, like fights that you can make at 122. There are guys at 118 who could come up, like Neary. Well, I guess Neary is coming up, but Rigondeaux, Donaire, Inoue, all these guys, like 122 suddenly become like a really good division. And like this wasn't supposed to happen, but I feel like this helps far more than if Fulton and Leo would have fought and somebody would have won and that would have been that.
No, for sure. I mean, like you said, last night really set up 122. I mean, we saw four great fighters at 122. And I sent you the list earlier of like all the great guys that are with PBC alone. Well,
I don't know. Marcus Bates was just okay. It's hard to know how good he is because he broke his hand. But I don't know.
Would you watch Marcus Bates again, though?
But yeah, I'd watch him again. I want to see how he fares without a broken hand. I don't know that I want to see him fight Aleem. I think Aleem just looked better than him. But one thing I will say about that fight
Aleem
before the broken hand.
No, Aleem is probably a tier above him. Sorry to cut you off.
Sure. One thing I noticed, though, those guys, when they exchanged like hard. And that fight wasn't the most interesting. But when they did have their exchanges prior to the broken hand, those guys were really throwing down. So I really liked Aleem. And Marcus Bates, I'll watch him again, but I'm not going to sit here and you know, he's not going to get included here. Aleem, maybe he does belong in the list of the top tier guys at 122. Now, I'm not talking about the elite guys. I mean the top tier, which is like 8 to 10 deep, you know? If we were making it an 8-man tournament, Aleem would probably make the cut as being one of the 8 seeds. But
yeah, I'm all in on Aleem.
So I mean, Fulton is the real big winner here because even though he got COVID and obviously anybody who watched his social media would have been like, yeah, this dude is about to get COVID and fall out of his fight because he was doing a little too much with the public, if you ask me, you know. And look, hey, you can have whatever feeling you want about COVID, but if you got a fight where they're going to test you for COVID, you may not want to be opening a restaurant and greeting the public and taking pictures with everybody, you know. I'm glad his restaurant is doing well, and I love seafood. I had seafood today, but, you know, I guess it all worked out because that fight that he's going to do with Leo is going to come with higher purses. It's going to come with more notoriety. Who knows when they do it, but I'm sure anybody who watched the fight last night is looking forward to it. And what do you think they should do with Tremaine Williams next? Like, if he comes back and fights on another PBC card, do you think it's fair to put him in with Aleem? Because that was the fight that they originally wanted to do. And what do you think about that fight? Because that's what I think. If it was me, I would probably just make that fight.
I mean, that would make sense. I mean, like, I think it would have made it a good fight because, you know, it's funny. A lot of times with, like, the super slick boxers, especially sometimes the smaller guys, I expect them to be on the move a whole lot more. But to Tremaine Williams' credit, he stayed in the pocket most of the time. And like, even before Leo turned the tide of the fight, in the first four rounds, he was in the center of the ring, letting his left hand go, and he was not punching and clinching or just moving around the ring in circles and circles and circles. He was trying to make it an entertaining fight, and, like, I was very impressed that he was able to do that. It was very, like...
I was about to say, he was able to be elusive in the pocket, which is not very common in the sport. Very few guys can do that, and he was doing that. The only problem is he only could do it for four rounds. And, like, when I was watching the fight, that was something that I immediately started to think about. I was like, all right, Tremaine Williams has that, like, what do we call it? Adrenaline speed right now. Well, like, he is in the zone, and he is super sharp, super fast, but... what's going to happen when he starts to, when fatigue starts to set in? And I'm not saying he gasses. I'm saying he starts to fatigue a bit because, like, Gary Russell Jr. is super fast, but after four rounds, Gary Russell Jr. turns into a completely different fighter, in my opinion. And that fighter he turns into, you know, is a good fighter, but, like, I don't think he's that fast. I don't think he's, like, this amazing fighter. And I wanted to see what would happen for Tremaine. Because up to that point, I was like, he is going to smoke Leo 12-0 if this keeps going that way. We'll see what happens when the fatigue sets in. And like you saw, he turned into a different fighter and Leo capitalized. He turned into a different fighter. And that fighter was the poison pill for Tremaine Williams because that was, from that point out, brutal for Tremaine. I mean,
yeah, my timeline after between rounds 3 and 4 was like, this is looking like a 12-0 snooze fest. And I was like, oh, man, I hope it doesn't go that way. And Leo made the necessary adjustments. So
this fight, you could hear, like, the corners, like, because they were whispering almost because they didn't want the other side to hear because it was so quiet in there and everything was mic'd up so you can hear it really nicely. But one thing in this fight that really stood out was Tremaine Williams' corner was, like, just not – it was like they were real harsh with him. Maybe that's not the right word to say, but they were just like, dude, acknowledging that he couldn't take the body shots. And so as the viewer, you could see, like, even if you couldn't pick up on the momentum shift in the ring, they were telling you Tremaine Williams is having trouble with the body work. And, like, that was something also from the broadcast that I really liked, is being able to clearly hear what the trainers were saying. Because Kevin Cunningham... now, I didn't catch this, okay? So Kenneth Buhari tweeted this out, and it was a good tweet. But when I was watching it, okay, I swear that I'm telling the truth here. I'm pretty sure if you ask Rollins, I said this to him. Right before Marcos Escudero got knocked out, I said, Kevin Cunningham is going to get him knocked out. And my reasoning there was that he was asking him to do something that, in my opinion, Escudero had no chance of doing because he just wasn't that skilled and wasn't that good. That was my feeling. Like he's telling him, you know, go out and be more aggressive, something like that. And, like, I was like, he's going to get knocked out. Buhari, he said that Kevin Cunningham had told him, like, hey, stop leaning forward because it was something like along the lines of, like, stop leaning forward, which obviously he leaned forward, he got knocked out. So, but we would not have heard that stuff probably if we were mic'd up the old way. So that was a very pleasant surprise to be able to hear that stuff and then see it play out in the ring. I think we already addressed that Aleem is one of the top, at least we can consider him amongst the top the top tier guys at 122. He's in that group of fighters now, and definitely he needs a better test. What do you think about Joe George? Like, obviously that was a great knockout, but do you think he's got real skills to be a player at 175?
I think he needs to get down with lines only to, like, bring. Oh, you know what? Actually, I wanted to say something. So I watched Joe George's post-fight press conference. It's like I thought it was going to be on Showtime's Facebook, and it wasn't. I had to catch it on YouTube on Fight Hype. But he said that he's really a 68-pounder. And the only reason he took either fight at 75 is because he needed a bag, essentially. So I guess when you think of Joe George, think of him at 68 and not 75. Well, with that said, my fault. I
don't know about that. Sometimes when you find success at a higher weight class and you're like, you know what, I don't really need to make 168. I'm good here. But go on with what you're saying.
I don't know. Based on what I saw him last night, him versus like, well, maybe this is like getting too far ahead of myself, but him versus like a Badu Jack or Jean Pascal or Marcus Brown would be like a disaster, I feel like. Like the first, so the fight got stopped in the ninth, right?
I believe so.
Okay, so the whole, every round, I'm like, why is he only throwing like four punches per round? Like, I don't know like what his strategy was or what was going on. And it kind of felt like he pulled that win from out of his butt. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe at 68, I'd be more curious about his chances. At 75, though, I don't know.
Okay, with this fight specifically, I just want to say, I don't want to spend too much time talking about this, but like, I thought the scoring was crazy in this fight. Like, even though Joe George wasn't throwing a lot, I didn't feel like Escudero was landing a lot of punches. Like, a lot of them were blocked, and he was getting credit for throwing punches, but not necessarily landing. I did not think that this was a close to shutout, that Farhood had it. And then when the scorers came back, you saw, like, this, they were all over the place again. And, like, my thought with this fight, and we have lots of fights like this, where it's like, you have two guys that their offenses are both good enough for the other one's defense to look good. But, like, obviously, they aren't that great. They're, like, just, I don't know, they're vulnerable to each other. And I felt like these two guys are perfect. They're made for each other. If they fight 10 more times, it's going to be the same fight every time. Either super controversial decision or Escudero's getting knocked out because Escudero has no power. Like, I am shocked that he did land some clean shots on Joe George, but, like, that dude could not hurt him. And I kind of sucks because Samson Lukowicz told him, like, hey, if you can't knock Joe George out, you suck. Along those lines. I'm paraphrasing here. And then he gets knocked out. Like, maybe he wanted to just get rid of him. I don't know. Anyway, so knowing what you know now, what do you think the ratings are going to be for this? Because I can't imagine that they're going to be good.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, being like a little bit of a PBC fanboy, I was hoping like 150 to 200,000. But
well, that would be extremely low for Showtime Championship Boxing. That's Showbox level.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't see a whole lot of promotion, so I guess I had low expectations going into this, and maybe like unnecessarily low. But you know, I'm rooting for them to have decent ratings. Like, what your opinion is of decent ratings, I'm not sure, but that was kind of what I was thinking going at, or exiting the cards.
No, I think you went a little too low. Usually the PBC Showtime Championship Boxing, like, we can go back years and years and years, they don't ever dip that low. But we are in a different time. We are in a pandemic, and there was a lot of things to watch on TV, as August 1st was like the first real day where we had a lot of live sports back. The NBA was going, the card was going head-to-head with the Lakers and Raptors, which I think at that point, though, at least by the main event or so, that game wasn't very competitive, so maybe people tuned in. I did see someone on Facebook post that the game was over for the Lakers and Raptors, so he was switching over to Showtime. But I think they'll be somewhere around 250, and I think that would be a low number for them, but I think it would be a decent number given what we know right now. It's not terribly off of their average that they normally do. Like, the ESPN Summer Series was, like, pretty bad compared to what they normally do. It was, like, half of what we normally expect to see from top-ranked cards. And if it was half what we expect to see from Showtime cards, it would mean that like 150,000 viewers watch, maybe a little more than that. And I don't think it's going to be that low. I think around 250 is probably what we expect. But I don't know. It's really hard to gauge with right now with the ratings, because I thought ESPN's ratings were going to do better than they did, and they did not. So certain sports are seeing increases in their ratings and others aren't. The real test is going to be what Fox does next, or this coming Saturday. All right. Did you see anything from the Matchroom card?
I did not get a chance to watch the Matchroom card, but I did get a lot of updates on my timeline.
Did you see the pictures and the videos of their setup?
Yeah, I saw the pyrotechnic show. It was a little
excessive. I think it was a kind of a
It was kind of very on brand for Eddie Hearn.
Yeah, I think Eddie really put his foot in his mouth when he said, "Hey, you know, what did he try to say? Like, he tried to dress things up that were actually bad, like put lipstick on a pig. He made some sort of statement like that about what Showtime was doing. And then Showtime came with this super bare bones, like, fights, and that's it. And, you know, for the most part, they're delivering on, like, good quality fights, and the fights that we saw were good. And then Eddie Hearn did this, you know, very intricate setup for the ring in a backyard, and there was a fireworks show, and it looked really nice. Obviously, you have a home like that with nice green grass, and it looks amazing. But the problem was that it was at night, so you couldn't see anything. I thought that was a really dumb idea. Like, why are you putting these shows on during the nighttime when it just looks like, okay, it's dark, cool. You know, obviously that's good for the fireworks show, but I wasn't super thrilled about the setup. And the real problem that the show had was that the fights to me weren't very good. And like Ted Cheeseman and Sam Eggington, well, that's a good fight domestically. And anybody who knows those two fighters knew you were about to get 12 rounds of senseless violence, because neither guy is capable of really defending themselves in the ring. But it was entertaining. I can't deny that. It just wasn't very high skill. Cheeseman won. Sam Eggington was, I think he should have been knocked down, or should have been called a knockdown, but they didn't call it. But either way, it didn't matter. Eggington took a hellacious beating in that fight. He gave some back, but like he really took the brunt of everything in that fight. And that's because Ted Cheeseman is at least aware of blocking, but it wasn't the most high skill fight. Fun though. It definitely wasn't a fan of Eddie Hearn's comments about, you know, trying to dress things up, because really he, like, that was exactly what he did. They put on this really nice venue, you know, it was very well done. This good design or whatever layout. The fireworks show is like, yeah, that's like literally a distraction from like the fact that you can't, like, these fights aren't good. They're not that much better than what Frank Warren's doing.
You know, I think it's like Eddie Hearn always puts himself in these weird positions, because I think his shtick in the UK is genius. Like, he can sell himself to the UK sports fan, and they'll rally behind him because he's like a fun, like, show there. And I mean the Eddie Hearn show. I don't mean Matchroom. And I don't mean boxing. I mean that brand of Eddie Hearn. It's like fun to watch because he's a bit of a lunatic. But like when you bring all that energy here, it's tough. There's NBA on. There is URL Rap League on, which is what I was watching during that show. There's Twitch. There's YouTube. There's a million other things to watch. And if you're not presenting,
playing
it. I'm sorry. Say it again. I'm sorry.
I said there's The Last of Us 2. You're probably playing it again.
There's the Last of Us 2. A very, you know, controversial video game. But with all that said, it's a very competitive market. And if you, Showtime did not dress up a pig. They put on very competitive fights, and you could sense, even if you didn't know much about any of the fighters on that card, that these were decently skilled fighters and there were stakes on the line, because how many of the fighters were undefeated on that card? It was 5 out of the 6, if I remember correctly, right?
Well, initially it was 5 out of the 6, but I think it was 4 because Bates had lost as well.
Yeah, so it was 4 undefeated fighters and 2 rematches. That's pretty good. So it wasn't dressing up a pig. I think Eddie dressed up the pig, and that's no disrespect to him. It's just when you bring that energy here, it's tough.
Yeah, so, I was like, this is cool for what it is, which is domestic British boxing, and, like, that was it. Like, you know, I don't really remember too much from the card. other than the fireworks show, I thought that was like, okay, cool, it's a fireworks show. But like, all I could think of watching that fireworks show is like all the people I've heard talk about how WCW used to spend like thousands and thousands of dollars on their fireworks shows every show. And it was literally the equivalent. It's the equivalent of burning money because it's super expensive to put on a fireworks show. And like it doesn't help anything. It's not like, it's not make or break. People don't not show up to the venue to see your event because you don't have a fireworks show. So yeah, let's move on. We had an announcement this week. Errol Spence and Danny Garcia announced that they're fighting on Fox. They cut the middleman out, which is the Mike Coppingers of the world, by saying, we are going to announce this fight by ourselves, which I thought was a good move because, like, that was Floyd's move. Floyd said, I'm announcing my fight. You are not announcing my fight. So November 21st, Danny Garcia and Errol Spence are going to fight on Fox pay-per-view. So, question for you. In your heart of hearts, do you think this is a good idea for Errol to go straight into a fight with Danny Garcia?
I think it's a risky move, but, you know, in the spirit of, like, talking about people's brand, I think it's very on-brand for Errol. I think Errol takes great pride in being a savage, being a real one, being thorough, being tough. And, like, I don't think he wanted a tune-up. I don't think he wanted to go in there versus, like, you guys, which no disrespect to you guys, because I think that's an amazing fight, and I'd really like to watch it. But I think Errol wants to stay right on track of, like, Danny Garcia, Pacquiao, Bud. Like, bring the smoke. I want it all. And so do I think it's the best idea if I was Errol's manager? Probably not. But sometimes, like, the same things that are mistakes, we love people for. And I think this could be one of those things. You know, I like it. I'm looking forward to it. I will be buying it, and I'm all in.
Yeah, I think definitely there is a lot of risk here because Danny Garcia can punch. He's not like a devastating puncher, you know, like Deontay Wilder, but he has a perfect combination of like he's – and I don't think Danny Garcia gets credit for this, and I – well, this isn't going to sound good, and maybe he shouldn't get credit for this. But Danny Garcia's got that Juan Manuel Marquez spirit in him where he's just like, all right, well, I'm going to sit here and I know I'm going to get a hit. So you can hit me, but I'm going to be timing a huge counter. So I'm going to take the shot and either you're going to knock me out or I'm going to knock you out. And so Danny Garcia has these moments in fights where he gets hit a lot, but he does land those big shots and punctuates exchanges. And that's risky because Errol's kind of a volume puncher. At least, actually, I think he's really hard to read because he does come out and fight. We have seen him fight differently against all of his opponents. Like, he really just straight up boxed Mikey Garcia. But obviously, we saw against Sean Porter, he just dug down and said, I'm going to outwork you. And I don't know what version of him comes out against Danny Garcia. And there's a real question of, like, will Spence be a little hesitant to take a shot?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still unsure of what kind of fighter Spence is. Like, I rewatched Kell Brook, I want to say 4 or 5 days ago, and it was kind of similar to the Sean Porter fight where he just tried to, he boxed a little bit, but he also he was doing his best to dog Kell Brook. Mikey was a lot of boxing. Lamont Peterson, he spent most of the time outside pounding on Lamont, but boxing, pounding and boxing. And so, like, I'm not sure which Errol will get here. I would bet on the boxing version of Errol. But, you know, we have no idea how he'll react to Danny's punches post-accident.
I mean, what would the best way to fight Danny Garcia? Like, would it make sense for him to just try to take it inside and make Danny fight on the inside and take away his ability to land a looping shot?
Well, have we seen Danny in a inside war type of fight before?
Not really. I think the Sean Porter fight was close to that, but I don't really think so. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really think Danny's been in a fight where somebody has just gotten on the inside on him and have made him not fight on the outside. And that's maybe a testament to Danny that he's good enough that everyone has to fight him at mid-range, which is where he wants you. And well, obviously he's big, he's strong. If anybody's going to be able to get in on Danny Garcia, it's going to be him. The question is that what he wants? And I think that that would probably be a good strategy, because if you can keep Danny from, you know, catching you at the end of his punches, that's better for you.
Yeah, and like, knowing Errol, I have a weird feeling that Errol's going to want to be the first to stop Danny Garcia. And maybe that's crazy talk, because has Danny, I don't think Danny's ever been dropped before.
I think he was dropped by Kendall Holt, but I
could that wouldn't be shocking, because Kendall Holt could crack.
Or maybe Kendall Holt, no. Did Kendall Holt drop Timothy Bradley? I think Danny's been down once in his career, but I can't remember who dropped him. It might be Kendall Holt. I don't know. I'm looking at Kendall Holt's box rec right now.
Yeah, while you're checking box rec, I think Errol's going to go in there to try to stop Danny. I think he's going to take like a Lamont Peterson approach. And it could be a mistake, because like, people love to hate on Danny Garcia. I'm not sure if it's because they hate Angel, or like they don't like Danny Garcia's like ring entrance as like the not the revolt, but the purge. But the guy is like, he lost to Sean by one round. He lost to Keith by one round. He, you know, Lamont Peterson was a very close fight. I mean, this kid can fight. He's no speed bump for anyone. He just like Sean Porter. Danny is tough for anyone and everyone. I don't care who you like, Bud, whoever your favorite is at 147. Danny will give them a tough fight. He may lose, he may not win or whatever, but Danny's tough. So I'm really looking forward to it. I love the matchup. They haven't announced the undercard yet, right?
No, they have not. I think we'll see that on Saturday.
I'm looking forward to what they have on the undercard. I'm sure it'll be fun and exciting, but it'll be a good one. I know that for sure.
Yeah, so I was wrong. I've looked around, and it doesn't seem like he's been dropped. We did get close against Keith Thurman. He definitely got buckled pretty badly, but that's the closest we've seen him. And like, he walked right through Lucas Matisse and took some huge shots from him and didn't go down. So,
question for you. Danny Garcia beats Errol Spence. I'm not going to say how, stoppage decision, whatever. What does that mean for 47? Your opinion?
I think it makes a lot of really interesting fights. It makes a lot of, because right now, I think we think of Errol as, will you stop your microphone from rubbing?
I'm sorry.
Right now, we think of Errol as like the top of the heap. And, you know, he's obviously number one in the division. But because he's number one in the division, that makes a lot of fights not very interesting for him. You know, the guy who's number one in the division usually doesn't get a pass for fighting anyone outside of the top few. And that's not fair, because like, if you look at the number three guy, Manny Pacquiao, you could conceivably be okay with Pacquiao fighting the number six guy. You could be okay with him fighting the number seven guy or the number eight guy. But number one doesn't really get that. And if Thurman were to lose, or sorry, not Thurman, he's already lost. If Spence were to lose, that opens up a lot of fights that could happen. But also, Danny Garcia, having lost to these two guys already, it opens the entire division up to mix these guys around and really try to match them, because clearly we don't know what's what in this division. Like, we thought it was Errol Spence who is the top of the division, and that's really not the case. So I think that that would be the one benefit if Errol lost, was like, now it throws everything into question. Like, okay, well, we thought Sean Porter wasn't, well, we thought he clearly wasn't better than Spence because he lost, but Porter beat Danny Garcia, who beat Errol Spence. Like, I think it just creates a round-robin situation at 147, which we have at 154, and it becomes real interesting to see what's happening in the division. But I don't know. I think if Spence were to lose to Danny Garcia, they'd clearly do a rematch, and if Spence lost a rematch, I think it would be likely that that would be a cause to believe the accident had some sort of effect, because right now on paper, before the accident, like, nobody gave Danny Garcia a chance against Errol Spence. By the way, the top three guys at 147 are all southpaws. Isn't that interesting?
Really? I've never thought about that. That is interesting.
Spence, Crawford, and Pacquiao. Assuming you believe that Terrence Crawford is a southpaw, and I believe you have no reason to believe that he should not be considered a southpaw.
I just know he switches a lot.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I think of the three pay-per-views, Spence, or well, I'll ask you, of the three pay-per-views, the Charlo's Leo and Tank and now Spence Garcia, which one are you most looking forward to?
Charlo's.
Really?
Yes.
You want to explain why?
Yeah, so the Charlo card, first of all, I don't know if a doubleheader pay-per-view has ever happened before.
I don't think so.
Not in my time watching boxing. But like, it has the two most challenging fights to call, in my opinion. Because I expect Errol to win against Danny. I think it'll be like a 8-4 kind of decision. I expect Tank to beat Leo. But I can't 100% confidently call either of those two Charlo fights.
Okay. I would probably pick Spence Garcia because I'm just super curious to see what Spence looks like after this accident. And it would be amazing if he comes back and looks the same. I mean, it would be really amazing because that was terrible. I don't know that you see many people get into an accident like that. And he didn't walk away from it, but wind up walking again. You know, something that's really interesting is I'm looking at BoxRec and from the number 1 to number 19. Or I guess we could say that from the top 20 on BoxRec, there are only two fighters at 147 under the age of 30. Virgil Ortiz and Kudratio Abdukakarov. So, okay. So PBC has announced back-to-back-to-back pay-per-views. We have the three that I just mentioned. Do you think it's a wise decision on their part, given that we are in the middle of a pandemic?
I don't know if I call it wise. I kind of look at it like they're taking a gamble. And, you know, like they're willing to see if it can pay off or not. I'm for sure going to get the Charlo's, Errol, and Leo fight or Tank fight, however you want to say it. So, like, from my perspective, it's going to pay off. I think the guys they've picked to be on pay-per-view, I know for sure. I think Errol will do good. I think Leo and Tank will do good. The Charlo ones, we'll see. But, you know, based on my friends and who I've talked to and, you know, my expectations, I think it'll be good. I think it'll go down well. What do you think?
To me, I think it is a really bold strategy, but I see the justification for it. Like, they're in a tough position because, like, you can't really put this level of fight on without pay-per-view at the moment because the network contract isn't necessarily going to cover the entire purses of these guys' fights. The Charlos make a lot of money. Tank and Leo Santa Cruz on the same night, like, you cannot make that fight right now given the circumstances. So the only way that you're going to get that money is if you do it on pay-per-view. Top Rank is feeling the same thing with Teofimo and Lomachenko, where it's like, how are you going to pay these guys the money? You know, Lomachenko is asking for $3 million plus for a fight. And you just went on your summer series, and rarely on any of these cards did all the purses add up to more than $1 million. So I struggle to see how they can justify or how they can come up with the money for these fights if they don't put it on pay-per-view. And like, you have to ask yourself as a boxing fan, do you want to see more fights on the level of the summer series, or say, okay, my favorite fighters are either going to be in complete showcases or I'm not going to see them until we can get crowds back, or I'll just pay to see them fight and they'll be in good fights. And all of these fights that we're going to see, that we could potentially see on pay-per-view this year, and I say potentially because I'm hoping that means Lomachenko and Teofimo are fighting too, they're going to have to be on pay-per-view. Otherwise, we can't get that level of fights.
You know, and I think there's a lot of moving parts too. Like, we don't, I'm not the biggest baseball fan, but I think I saw an article that said there's a chance that the season may be called short. Am I correct?
Yeah.
So you have that. If that happens with baseball, you have to wonder what's going to happen with the NFL. And so depending on what happens with these other leagues, there could be more of a desire to see more sports. That could influence how things are marketed, because we all know Fox will use the NFL to promote. You know, they used it to promote Wilder and Fury too. So I doubt it would be any different with Errol and Danny. And so I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, in my opinion.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how no NFL, no other than the NBA, how that affects PBC's like ratings on Fox, because obviously a big part, at least that we've come to know with their success, with their ratings, has come from those commercials that air during NFL games and college football games. So that's a real interesting one. Let me see. Okay. I mean, look, I think the reality is that these guys, they get paid a lot of money, and you're asking fighters to take risky fights. You need to compensate them properly. And they're not doing these fights if there's no money. And the only way you can get money easily with no fans in the venue is to make them pay to watch on TV. And so I can completely just see the justification for pay-per-view. I'll order all of them. That's not a problem, because I just see it like, as a boxing fan, if I add up all the pay-per-views I buy during the year, which isn't a ton, but if I add up all the pay-per-views that I buy during the year, like, is that worth it to watch boxing and be a fan and enjoy the sport? I'd say it's worth it every single time. When Floyd and Manny fought on pay-per-view twice a year, and then you had the rare Miguel Cotto or Julio Cesar Chavez or Canelo pay-per-view added into that, to me, it was always worth it to just buy all the pay-per-views, because at the end of the day, I enjoyed the sport. And to me, like, this is my way of supporting. I'll subscribe to HBO at the time and Showtime, because that's my way of supporting the sport. And to right now, that's how I feel right now. It's like, I'm going to support the sport however I can. And buying pay-per-views is how I'm going to do it. Subscribing to the services and the networks, you know, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't say that. But it definitely, signing up for YouTube TV, one of the things about it was like, hey, because I need to watch Top Rank with their new ESPN deal, which I didn't have it before. Obviously, the NFL, or it's not the NFL, but the NBA was also a big factor there. But anyway, it looks like we are not going to get the Lomachenko and Teofimo fight, because Top Rank is having a little bit of trouble separating out, splitting the money up between the two. Essentially, we know that Lomachenko had agreed to a $3.25 million offer, and then Teofimo was offered $1.2 million, which he is not happy about. Do you think Lomachenko, and I saw, or sorry, Teofimo, and I saw people saying this on Twitter, that just because that is his career, would be a career high payday for him, he should take it and not really try to play hardball here. Do you agree with that?
No, I think he should definitely play hardball. And like, I don't get this. Like, I don't know why boxing fans, or Twitter boxing fans, are so eager to see fighters like say F it, like take less money, prove yourself in the ring, and like get the money later. Like, I don't think that's how entertainment goes. I think if you could make a case for yourself, either with metrics of like how many people watch your fights, how many butts you put in the seats, or like social or hype, like which would maybe be like Ryan Garcia's case on Instagram and Twitter. If you could make the case for getting more money, go get more money. That's the role of a good manager, sometimes a promoter. And like, I'm all for T.O. getting what he wants to put that fight on. Yeah, I don't get why people aren't on T.O.'s side there. It's a little weird to me.
Well, I mean, there's this weird thing where people oftentimes will side with the promoter when it's clear that they're the ones who are in the wrong. Because look, PBC somehow figured this out. Okay, they figured this out with bigger names than Lomachenko and Teofimo. Top Rank, you got probably in-house only one pay-per-view fight that you could really make, and that's Lomachenko and Teofimo. So, like, you can't figure this out? You can't put this on pay-per-view and just say, like, hey, we're going to give you guys what you want? You scrimped and saved all summer long with the summer series where, yeah, testing costs a lot, but it wasn't that much. You didn't break the bank over this. And, like, this calls into question, like, okay, did ESPN, like, is that deal not what they say it is? And is Top Rank really not getting the money that they, or at least Max Kellerman, claimed that their deal was worth? I mean, I don't know. But to me, if I'm Teofimo, like, there's no way I'm going to sit there and say, look, I see all these PBC guys. They got their fights. How come I can't get my fight? It's not like you guys, Tyson Fury, like, that fight with Wilder is already done. It's a done deal. They'll do that fight when they do it, but like, you guys got that one already squared away. So don't tell me you're trying to figure out the Tyson Fury situation. Terrence Crawford is not fighting one of the PBC guys. I know already that he's not because it's too late. They all got fights already. So you're going to have him fight whoever. I don't know. Maybe you do the Pacquiao fight. I don't think so. But, like, what about me? I'm the only fight that you got that's going to be on PBC, or that's going to be a full ESPN in-house deal. Now, is it possible, and I think it is, that maybe Top Rank just doesn't want to do that fight right now, and the reasoning for it is because, A, they've already gotten beat to the dates, and I don't think that in a pandemic we really need to have two pay-per-views in a month. So maybe they look at it that way, unless they say, okay, December, but December is the targeted date for Wilder Fury 3. We don't know when that's going to happen, but at some point it should happen. So maybe they're holding out hope that they could get that fight done for December, which would mean that September, October, November, December, all pay-per-views. So then when do you put that fight? Then they said that ESPN, regular ESPN, wanted the fight and that they were going to put it on regular ESPN, but then Teofimo was like, that's not enough money. So this is a real strange situation, and like either Top Rank needs to just come out and say they're not fighting right now and stop jerking everyone along, including the fighters, or make it happen.
Yeah, that's kind of my issue. Is like I'm sensing, and I could be wrong, that like Top Rank wants to like, what is it like called, the dog and pony show, right? Like they want to like celebrate that we're definitely going to get this fight and it's going to happen. And but you know what? If you can't make the fight because of the pandemic, just say that. I don't think any boxing fan will be disappointed about that because this is like a really unusual and unique situation. If the money isn't there to make the fight, just say that. I'm sure T.O. and Loma will also understand that. But like by going through this big, long process, you're making one or both of your fighters look stupid. And like I'm not into that personally. Like I don't think either guy is scared. I don't think either guy is being a diva. When you compare – because they're saying that T.O. would get 1.3, if I remember correctly, right?
1.2.
If you look at some of Top Rank, the fights that they put on like in the past year, there's been way lesser guys that have gotten like right around 1 million. T.O. is worth more than like 1.2, to be fair. So if they can't do it, they should just say it, in my opinion.
Well, I did the math on it, and it's like a 75-25 split for Lomachenko. So I can 100% see why Teofimo would be upset. Like, 25% for me? Because also, you got to consider, I don't think that they would be making this fight if they didn't think Teofimo was the future. And, like, I think it's very easy to think that of all of Top Rank's prospects, including Shakur Stevenson, who is very talented, but if you look at all these guys, it's easy to see that Teofimo has the chance to be a superstar. None of the other guys do. Like, I love Shakur Stevenson, and I think he's a lot better than Teofimo, but Teofimo has a chance to be a superstar. Shakur don't got that. You got to pay that guy more. This has to be close to a 60-40 split if you are going to have, if you're not going to do a 50-50. And obviously, Lomachenko, he's going to have problems with that. So, do you think the fight happens this year?
I'll say no. I just don't like the energy around it. You know, I feel like when fights are going to happen, you don't hear a whole lot about it. It just kind of gets announced out of nowhere. And all the Twitter debates and Bob talking and T.O. calling Lomo a diva, I just don't, you know, I don't think we're going to get it.
I was in that boat, but I do think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on them right now because PBC's got their schedule. They're going to be going hard in the paint. They've got some great fights coming up. I'm sure Golden Boy, well, I mean, that's a whole other thing. We're not going to talk about this today, but who knows what's going on with Canelo. But I would assume that Golden Boy, they're going to get going. Top Rank has got to do something. And I think that they're going to try to press to make some really good fights. And this obviously would categorize as one of those really good fights. Okay, moving on. Devin Haney, he says that he is going to be fighting or negotiate or something. Yuriorkis Gamboa. You think it's a smart move for Devin Haney to go after Tank's leftovers?
Well, I've seen a few interviews on YouTube recently, and I'm really not into, like, Devin Haney's trajectory, literally in the past seven days, for me, has went from, like, not bad to, like, I'm not too into it. Like, I'm not really digging this, the idea of this Gamboa fight. I think it's a clout chase with Tank Davis. And not to say like it was the best win for Tank. It was like a solid win. But you're fighting a guy that's coming off a torn Achilles that was also knocked out, and he's like 38 to 40 years old, right?
Yeah. I don't think that there's any good way to really...
Yeah, so no thanks. I pass. You know, maybe there's some people out there that want to see it, but I'm cool. I would have much rather see Haney go after Fortuna, which I think was being debated for a minute, but it's not anymore. Or Linares, which now they're fighting each other, so that's not really an option. But yeah, I'm not too into it.
I don't hate it. I obviously think it's not a good fight for Haney. Like, he is way better than Gamboa. And Gamboa, like, it's funny because people talk about Tank struggling against Gamboa. He only struggled to knock him out, but he did not struggle in any other sense of the word. Like, Gamboa landed maybe two or three clean shots the whole fight. Tank really just demolished him for 12 rounds until he got stopped. I think it was a 12-round stoppage. And for Devin Haney, like, he doesn't gain anything from this fight. Like, he's not as small as Tank, so he's going to look like a giant compared to Gamboa. That's not going to be good for optics. When he wins, people are going to easily be able to bring up, like, well, you know, Tank stopped him as well. So I don't think it's that good for Haney, but at the same time, like, I don't hate it. Like, it could be worse. And Haney's trying to grow not just his skills, but also become a star. And, like, to be a star, you have to beat people that everyone knows and recognizes. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to fight good guys. You can just fight guys that are known. That helps a lot more than, say, if he fought a guy from Russia who was 13-1. That wouldn't really help him that much. So I don't hate the idea, but I definitely don't think it's good for his career necessarily, in terms of, like, he's not going to get better fighting Gamboa.
In a perfect world, who do you think would be ideal for Haney right now? And I guess, like, let's be realistic, because some guys are scheduled and stuff like that.
That's a good question. It depends on if we believe Devin Haney, that when he says that he's not going to fight, he's only got one more fight at 135. I think I would check in and see if, like, I could fight maybe someone like Masayuki Ito. He's somebody that's fought for a world title. He's not that great, but, like, he's not coming in, like, completely shot. You know, Ito went 12 rounds with Jamel Herring. He's not fantastic, but, like, you know, it's passable. I really don't see, there's not a lot of options for Haney at 135, because the division is full of, like, three or four big names and then everyone else.
And Ryan Garcia is not a realistic name drop right here, right?
No, I don't think that fight's happening anytime soon. They can talk as much as they want. I just don't think that they're going to really be down with it. I mean, Francisco Patera might be a good matchup for him. Patera, I know he beat up on one of Eddie's prospects, Lewis Ritson. That may not be a bad fight for him, even though Patera's lost a few times. That was a long time ago. You can definitely frame it as, like, saying, this guy hasn't lost in 3 years, blah, blah, blah. So that's a good one. All right, other announcement this week. Top Rank announced that Eleider Alvarez versus Joe Smith Jr. This is a fight that was already planned. That has been rescheduled for August 22nd, and it's going to be on ESPN Plus, which, you know, I don't necessarily love, but I guess they got to do it. The NBA playoffs are going to be going on at that time, so that will take precedent over boxing and Jose Ramirez and Victor Postol. That's also going to be on ESPN Plus. There's a rumor that the Mean Machine, Igis Kavalauskas, will be back September 12th against Amir Imam. Probably not the best fight or night to do a fight, because it's going to go head-to-head with the Tyson Jones fight, which low-key might do very big numbers.
high-key.
I don't know. All right, this coming Saturday, PBC will be back on Fox. Jamal James is in the main event. He will fight Tomas Dulorme. You would think that Jamal James isn't any danger of losing here.
I don't know. I'm not going to underrate Dulorme's chances. I feel like every fight I see him in, it's like hyper-competitive, and he, like, either he's going to, like, lose close or win close. I thought Jamal James would take a bigger jump by now. Honestly, I thought he'd be on, like, like a Lipinets or Sean Porter by now. But I don't know. I'll give him the nod in this one.
I think if he wins this fight, Jamal James will certainly be at that level where he's going to be fighting somebody with the name. Delorme is an interesting fighter, and I think Delorme is a guy that he is like the perfect measuring stick for welterweight. Like, Jesse Vargas isn't going to be able to beat him because Jesse Vargas isn't an elite fighter. But Ugas, he showed that he was ready to be elite, and he beat Delorme, even though it was a really tough fight for him. He was down in the seventh round of that fight. But I think Delorme is a guy that he was super highly touted when he came up. And then he had to take, or at least he went super inactive with his fights. And now he's back semi-regularly. And he does look a lot better than he did early, especially after the Terrence Crawford fight. He did not look very good. Didn't look like he had any confidence whatsoever. So, yeah, I think this will be, and like, I think you said it, Delorme is just a competitive guy. He's not necessarily going to beat the top guys, but he's going to be competitive. And this will be a good test because Jamal James, if you're not sold on him, like, I don't blame you. There's nothing that he's done thus far that should thoroughly convince you that he's, like, ready for that next level. So, I mean, going to war with Antonio DeMarco, that wasn't the greatest sign, but he did get the win, which I guess Giovanni Santion could say too, even though most people thought that that was a bit of a questionable decision. On the undercard, David Morrell versus Lennox Ellen. Morrell is like, what, is he 3-0 or 2-0? This is wild because David Morrell was not very known, at least to me, and then he turned pro, and it's like this guy, his first pro fight was like, okay, dude's 2-6. Second pro fight, guy's 15-6, and I'm like, okay, that's quite a big leap for a guy with one pro fight. And he's just blown both of his guys out, and now he's going to fight for a world title. And this dude was super highly touted as an amateur. He doesn't have his full record on BoxRec, but he was like, he's from Cuba, and he was highly touted coming up. So is he any good? We're about to see. I don't know. He looks good, but the level of opponent hasn't been great. The guy he's fighting, Lennox Allen, on Saturday night, I don't know. He's undefeated. He's 22-0 with one draw. He seems like he's an okay fighter. But, I mean, even an okay fighter against a guy with two pro fights, that's a little concerning to me.
Yeah, I haven't. Like, I've been meaning to pull up his YouTube fights. I mean, there's only, like, two fights, so who knows. But they're talking about this dude like he's going to have, like, a Lomachenko-ish, like, ready for like the championship level on his 10th fight. So I'm like very eager to see how good he is. I hope he's as good as advertised, because I think it'd be fun for 68 at PBC, but we'll see.
Yeah, the only guy I really recognize on his BoxRec, because now BoxRec has amateur records, but even though it's not complete, is Julio Cesar La Cruz, and he lost to him in the Cuban Nationals in 2016. So that, I'm not so sure. It's pretty interesting. This dude, like, Morrell is only 22, and he had
baby.
Yeah, and he already had a lengthy run as an amateur. So, I don't know. If he puts it together, we could have a long reign ahead of us if he is as advertised.
Cuba takeover.
Omar Juarez will be the opener against Willie Shaw. I expect Omar Juarez to have a very clean win here. It's a nice showcase. And then on the untelevised undercard, Michael Fox, Vito Melnecki, and Luis Pena. And this is an interesting thing. Rather than have a prelim, which is a card before the main card starts, it's going to be after. So after the main event, that's when they're going to do the prelim, what would normally be the prelims, and those will be on FS1. So it'll be on Fox, then you're going to go to FS1. And so I think there's also a matchroom fight camp. Terry Harper is back. This card doesn't look very good. Doesn't look like there's not much to it. Carl Frampton, I think, is back this week, or is that next week? I think I might have that wrong. I hope I don't have that wrong. Let me look real quick.
Yeah, I have to pull that one up.
Yeah, I was wrong. It's next week. The following week. Sorry. So that's it for this week. So that is it for this episode. We thank you for listening. It was a shorter one because, you know, there's not a lot of news. We've gone into Canelo so many times. I don't know what is happening with these people, why they can't get it together. Obviously, the money situation is an issue. If you want more, go to the Patreon feed, which is patreon.com/SundayPuncher. There's more than enough discussion on Canelo and all that over there. We talk more in depth on ratings, more in depth on TV, like sort of media stuff. All sorts of other things, way more in depth than we do on this podcast, because we try to keep it moving here. You want to talk, well, you want to hear about everything. You may not want to sit for 45 minutes on one subject, although sometimes it does feel like we do that. So thanks so much for listening. Lex, thanks for coming on. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will be back very soon.